Welcome. This is Cascade Church Portland's podcast. We exist to invite all people to join us as we follow Jesus together in bringing heaven to earth.
All right. Good morning again. It's good to see you. So last summer, I had an opportunity to go to Peru. And I actually got to hike the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. It was very exciting. And when we were there, when you finally get to Machu Picchu, which if you're not familiar, in Peru, it's way up in the mountains. And it's this big, like it's breathtakingly beautiful structure that was built by the Incans there. And one of the things that we actually have a picture of one of the structures that's there at Machu Picchu. What's so interesting is that in Peru, their religious life was centered around a number of different gods, but one of them was Inti. It's the sun god. And the sun god was of primary importance. And actually, this religious center that they built on Machu Picchu, this right here is the astronomy center. And it's very interesting because you can see it's rounded and all the rest of the structure, it's very square and squatty and kind of moving up. It's kind of different terraces. And when you look, you're like, that's two kind of interesting windows that they have there with the different kind of hooks and things that are on there. Here's what's fascinating about those windows. They were so tuned into the sun and their worship of the sun god that those windows represent the exact spot where during the summer solstice and the winter solstice, where the sun would hit that particular mountain. So they have pictures, because it still happens to this day, right the moment when the sun rises, it has this direct beam through those windows, and it drops right into the ground there, which again, it was so, because of how I am so disconnected to the movement of the sun and things that are happening because of how our world is structured today. But they had this kind of intimate and precise knowledge. They actually believed that it was a cord that was connecting the sun and the sun god to their people. Now, some of the things that was interesting about the worship of the sun god is that during these festivals, and there was a big one in June for Inti, they would sacrifice many an alpaca, and it would be to appease the sun gods. And actually, if there's any kind of natural disaster, they would kind of up the ante, and sometimes they would sacrifice children from the tribe to, again, to appease the sun god and to see the continuation of the Inca people go on. And this is something that actually isn't uncommon in the ancient world. If you think about it, if you're going to pick a thing to worship, the sun's a pretty good one. Because it's the warmth. The sun is a uses things to grow. It gives you light to see. I mean, honestly, the sun is a hugely important factor, even how we've structured our lives here in Portland, Oregon. I promise, the sun is incredibly important in the things that it does. What's interesting, though, is that the relationship is set up that the sun is something to appease. The sun god is something to appease because you never quite know where you stand in relationship with the sun god other than to look at the circumstances in your life. And if something bad is happening around you, then clearly this god is upset and we have to sacrifice, we have to do something to gain back this god's favor. Now, the reason why I say all that is it's really helpful to look at kind of ancient people and folks that worship other things because it feels so foreign. Does anyone know a sun worshiper? Not someone who enjoys the sun, sans SPF, but like worships the sun. Anyone? Just okay. There's a little part of me that was hopeful that you did so I could talk to you afterwards. That would be a fascinating human being to talk to. So we kind of have agreed, just even through, you know, statistics and population, that worshiping the sun's kind of silly. It's just a star. It's a thing. And it has these regular patterns, but no amount of killing alpacas is going to change how the sun interacts with the earth. And yet, I would suggest, as we talk about prayer today, some of the ways we treat and engage God isn't all that much different than how people treated and engaged with the sun god. There was this sense of appeasing. There was this sense of looking at the dangerous things that are happening in our lives and in our circumstances, and something must be wrong, so there has to be some sort of ritual, some sort of way that we can talk to or appease or interact with this god. This morning, when we're talking about our core value of prayer, we want to talk about what is prayer. As Janet brought up, most people would say, I'd like to pray more. But here's a question if that's you. Why? Why would you like to pray more? I know it's the right answer. We're in church. I get it. But why do you want to pray more? What is it that you hope prayer would accomplish? What's the significance of it? And because the different functions of prayer, it looks all kinds of different ways in different groups, in different churches, in different spaces, there can be an understanding that you come into this room of what prayer is, and it can either say that's the only way it could be, or it can go the other way where you can say, I actually don't really want to engage in prayer because I engaged in prayer in these particular ways and it didn't work. It seems to kind of be a waste of time. And for others of you, it's an active, vibrant part of your life, and you're dying inside. You're like, what are you talking about? Prayer is amazing. Prayer is awesome. How do we understand it? So that's what we want to talk about today. It is a core value here. That's what we're going through, our core values. We just last week, we had Harriet was sharing with us about intentionality, to go a step beyond in our relationship, step beyond what is known or comfortable. And Harriet did a great job of kind of talking about how it interacts with all kinds of our other core values. We talked about curiosity, that there's more we don't know about God in the world than what we do know. So how do we engage into the mystery, the unknown, one, by not pretending we know everything, and two, with an openness to grow and understand more about who God is and how the world works. And we've also talked about diversity. We've talked about our value to being in relationships with people who are different than us, because one God who created all people created diversity and speaks to us through diversity. So being in spaces, I would say, following up on what David just shared with us, you can be around a lot of people who are just like you, and it's just as dangerous as being in isolation. It's actually kind of the same thing. And a lot of times we love to be in communities of people who look like us and think like us. It's just as dangerous as being all alone. So how do we actively get into, and when we have an encounter with someone, we're like, I think they think something different, we say, yes, instead of, oh no, I'm in the wrong spot. So to talk about prayer this morning and how we understand it, I want to look at a passage in Luke. So if you brought a Bible with you, I encourage you to turn to Luke 18. If you didn't, that's okay. It's going to be up on the screen. But we're going to look at Luke 18, verses 9 through 14 this morning. So this is, Jesus is telling a couple of stories, parables. And he's already told one about prayer. This is his second one about prayer. It's fascinating. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Which, by the way, just as a quick aside, I think that's an interesting introduction. Was Jesus like, you, I have a story. Can you come over here for a second? I don't know how that worked exactly. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, which is a great prayer. Robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. Continuing on in verse 13. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. So let's talk for a second about these two different people, tax collector and the Pharisee. To set the scene, a Pharisee is a pastor. It's a religious leader. It's someone who has given their life and their time to kind of study the things of God. And something about doing that and following that particular path, we had seen this manifestation of the Pharisees all throughout the Bible, that there was great certainty that they were right. And they had cornered the market on this understanding and experience of God. So the Pharisees are often the ones that are questioning Jesus or leaning into Jesus because Jesus is bringing about a different way of thinking about God and interacting with God. And it comes directly at the threat of people who have already mastered a particular religious system and stand on the top of that mountain. And when another teacher comes over here and says, hey guys, God's over here too, that's really threatening. When you have spent your life playing king of the religious mountain and you're there, you're at the top. And so there is a lot of these kinds of things where Jesus was calling out and questioning this. Now, the tax collectors, nobody really likes taxes, right? We're not like huge fans. Sometimes we like what they like bring about, roads and public education. But like at most, no people are like, I'm for more taxes. And you would think, well, that's what it's tied to in the ancient world. They just didn't like people that had that job. But it's way deeper than that. So this is Roman-occupied territory. It means all the Israelites, which is the audience. It's Jesus himself is Jewish. Those are his disciples are Jewish. And those are the people that are around. If you were a tax collector, that means that you were working for the Roman government. And for a Jew, this is a direct violation of who their identity and who they are as God's chosen people. To partner with the empire that is ruling you and is holding you in place is already a direct violation. It's already looked at with scorn. It's looked down at by everyone in your family that's what you chose to do. And then the second level to a tax collector is not just someone who is working for the empire, but it was said that there was no such thing as poor tax collectors. Because a tax collector had to collect a certain amount for the Roman government, but that wasn't the only amount they could collect. They could collect whatever they wanted to, and they just got to keep whatever was left over. So again, no one was saying like, I don't know, I'm looking for like a small little 5% return here. No, you were seeing how much money you could get to take from people, which you're located where you grew up, you're located in your different regions. So for these folks, they were taking from their own people. Jews were taking from the Jewish people, and they worked for the Roman Empire. So you can see in this story, when Jesus uses the Pharisee and you use the tax collector, it's already set up that there's a hero in the story and there is someone who should not be there. Now, if we look again, if we can go back to the first part of this, I love the Pharisee's prayer because I think it's hilarious. God, I thank you that I am not like other people. It's a fantastic opening to a prayer. You might want to try it sometimes. And I love that he's like, robbers. You know, people that steal goods from other people, evildoers. Let's be honest, that's just a catch-all category, right? Just people who do evil, adulterers, people who go and violate relationship with other people's spouses, or even, I don't know, God, this guy over here, right? All of 10 feet from me, this person over here. And remember all the categories I talked about? He's like that, kind of awful. And then he uses the prayer to talk about the things that he does. I fast twice a week. Now, within the Jewish culture, fasting was something that was a regular part of it. It's going without food. It's not eating for a particular day. And it was a religious observance. Now, you would be seen, if you fast once a week, that's like high-level fasting. That's impressive. This guy is like, oh, I'm twice as good. Twice a week I fast. You know what? Food is optional in my life. I'm so holy. This is the kind of level of religious mountaintop I have reached. And I give a tenth of all that I get. Jesus talks later about this, that some Pharisees would pride themselves on they would go down to the market and they would get some spice. And spice was incredibly rare during this time. You don't just go to Winco and have like a bucket you just dig out of cinnamon. It was like very rare to get some spices. So you would go down to the market and get a tiny little bit of spice, and they would say that these Pharisees would take 10% from that spice and they would give it away. They would give it to the temple. This would be a part of their religious observation. There was nothing so small that they give that they wouldn't give 10% of it back to God. Here's what's important to know, and this is why I'm going into so much detail here. A lot of times we read these stories of Jesus, and we get caught in the details a bit, but we miss the big picture. The thing that the Pharisee is doing here is he's talking about how great he is, how much better he is than everybody else. But the prayer is used not to actually deal with the reality of his life, but it's used to talk about how great he is. You know people that don't do this through prayer, but every time you talk to them, they're talking about how awesome they are. They're talking about how successful they are. And they're talking about, this last weekend was pretty good. Let's see, I went golfing, 10 under, pretty good. I drove there in my amazing car. Went there with my amazingly attractive spouse. Our two perfect children scored 5 goals in soccer this weekend. Everything they talk about is creating a picture of them they want you to see. This does not come out of a real place of who they are. It comes out of a fearful place that there's a different them that you could see, and they want to control that narrative. Are you with me? People who spend all their time talking about how great they are, that's not coming from a good place. That's not coming from health. And so a lot of time, we spend our time annoyed and frustrated and separating ourselves more and more from people who could probably use community the most. The sin of this man is not being too awesome. The sin he's talking about all is speaking a reality other than the one that's true. He's talking about all of these things as if they are the most important part of his life.